Well, gentlemen, welcome to the official, finally, the first official edition of Top Turnbuckle. It is finally going down.
Yeah.
As you were probably listening to this on the Cage Side blog on sportsnet590.ca. I'm Rob Wong, joined alongside in studio by Rudy Blair. Over the phone is Jeff Rahoman as Snowmageddon has hit Brampton. Isn't that right, Jeff?
It has, yeah. It's pretty crazy out here. I wasn't risking taking the 401 in.
That's not true. You are a coward not coming in here. You know that I've been looking for you for a long time. We got to have a match at WrestleMania, you and I.
I was bracing for a chair shot while I did this interview.
Always good talking to you, buddy.
Always good.
All right, let's get right into it, guys. And obviously the Royal Rumble is coming up this Sunday from St. Louis, Missouri. We saw on Monday that finally Chris Jericho spoke. He entered the Royal Rumble, and that's all he said, basically. He said, the world is coming to an end this Sunday, basically throwing his name into the 30-man Royal Rumble. Let's just get your thoughts on what you've thought so far over the last couple of weeks. We haven't talked for a while about this whole Chris Jericho thing and him not talking, running around, doing crazy things. I personally like it. I mean, I think it's really built up his character. They're finally starting to boo him. Which is, I think, exactly what they want. They want to turn him into a heel. I mean, it's tough because people haven't seen Chris Jericho in a long time, so every time he goes into a new arena, he's going to get a pop. People are going to cheer him. I mean, he's a famous, famous wrestler, but I think fans are finally starting to turn on him a little bit. Rudy, what do you think about this whole Chris Jericho fiasco?
Well, I don't know if I like it or dislike it. I found it interesting the way they set this whole thing up. But then when he finally spoke, my first thought was, he's like this computer virus that's in the system, yeah. You know, talking about how, you know, the end of the world, you know, this, you know, that Y2 is really getting deep in this whole Chris Jericho matter. So, I did like a little bit of this whole, you know, don't let him talk. And, you know, the fact that we went that did that to, what was it, the 3-man tag team?
Yeah.
And, you know, when he was tagged in and he ran around and then he walked out, I thought that was interesting. You know, I think that really set the pace of people knowing that, okay, there's something wrong here. He's not coming back as a good guy. He's a heel. But what his objective is, we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. We all know that he probably wants to be world champion again and how he's going to go about this. He's It's interesting. It's interesting. But like I said, it just reminds me of he's almost like this virus that's, you know, in this computer system, and he's now going to be the virus of the WWE.
Well, there's the rumors out there all over the internet that, you know, Chris Jericho came back and eventually they're going to work it where he will face CM Punk at WrestleMania. That is the rumor. I mean, Punk obviously is busy right now with Dolph Ziggler. But Jeff, I know you think this whole Chris Jericho thing has been poorly done so far.
Yeah, I mean, I thought right off the beginning, you know, we talked about it before, I thought he just came across as such a dork with the way he was sort of playing up to the crowd and pointing to each side of the ring to try and get a pop. But if there's now starting to boo him, I guess the work has been put in and the right result is happening. I mean, I've always liked Chris Jericho more as a heel than as a babyface because he can work it so much better. And if he is getting booed, then that's fantastic. But my problem is, you know, going into the Royal Rumble, I mean, it just seems like it's just such an easy thing to put Chris Jericho over at the Royal Rumble. You know, like, why not try and build somebody else up? I know that, you know, we've talked about it, that maybe Jericho or Randy Orton are probably the favorites to win the Rumble and then go on for the title match at WrestleMania. But I don't know, it just seems too easy for me. And I mean, I know with all these, you know, these rumors that the world is ending in 2012, but he came into the WWE, you know, in 1999 doing the whole the world is coming to an end Y2J gimmick. And here we are, you know, 12, 13 years later, and he's still doing the same thing, and he's so charismatic that you'd think that they'd be able, either he would be able to, or the WWE would be able to come up with, something new or something fresh for him, as opposed to just, you know, him doing this sort of virus gimmick that Rudy alluded to.
Yeah, well, it's been kind of a slow build, and I think, like Rudy says, it's interesting because, you know, they really haven't done something like this before where a guy comes out and doesn't talk. Usually the guys that don't talk are the guys that can't talk. You know, they're the guys that can't cut the promos, like the John Morrisons, the guys that shouldn't be talking on the mic. But it's interesting that they have taken such a charismatic guy and turned him into essentially a mute, and it's quite interesting. We'll get into the picks. I'm sure Chris Jericho will make another appearance when we get into the picks for Royal Rumble, but let's talk about some other things that have been going on in the WWE, beginning with Brodus Clay.
Oh, God.
I know this is an interesting conversation piece for the two of you guys. I personally love it. For whatever reason, I mean, they had built Brodus Clay up in those vignettes before he made his re-debut about how he was going to be a big bruiser and just run through people and just be a big, you know, guy that just couldn't be stopped. He still is now that he's debuted, but he's the Funkasaurus now. He's, you know, from the planet Funk. He's the only living Funkasaurus in captivity, I believe is what they say. So if, for those that haven't seen it, I mean, he's basically Flash Funk. Brodus Clay gets in the ring, does a little dance, and then you know, squashes a guy for 30 seconds, and he's run through some of the really low card guys in the WWE so far. But Jeff, we'll start with you. I don't really know what to ask you, but I mean, I know you think this is a really crazy situation with Brodus Clay.
Funny. I mean, I was just talking about how, you know, they need to freshen up Jericho a little bit, and then, like you mentioned, they're bringing back Flash Funk, and it's just a completely different character. This is the type of character that I like, because it's funny. Like, I love the sort of the humor that that some of these gimmicks have that the WWE comes up with. So I sort of like it, but I don't think it's right for this particular guy. I mean, like you said, they were building him up as this big sort of bruiser, like, you know what, like Umaga was when he first came in. He was just going to run through people, and I thought that was, he has such an interesting look. I thought that maybe that would be, you know, just like, just go with his look and just have him be that bruiser. And I don't think you need to put this sort of gimmick on a guy like that. I mean, maybe that's why it's even more funny, because of the way he looks. And now he's trying to be this sort of, you know, new age Run DMC with the big gold chain and the red Adidas tracksuit. But to me, I mean, I like the gimmick. I just think maybe it might have been better suited for, you know, a newer guy, somebody that didn't have this look, somebody that wasn't, you know, was big and wasn't being built up as, you know, this big hulking bruiser that was just going to run through the entire roster, and all of a sudden that was dropped, and we get a new age pimp.
And the issue with these gimmicks is that they don't have usually a long, you know, lifespan. I mean, The Godfather maybe, but I mean, we all know what ended up with him. I mean, he wasn't really, you know, anything more than a low card guy. Flash Funk as well, the Good Father as well. But Rudy, you're shaking your head about this gimmick. You're not too interested in it.
Man, I'm calling it straight out racist right off the top. My problem with this is it just reminds me from back in the day when, you know, you had Slick or worse, and this one always makes me cringe. Do you remember Akeem the African Dream?
Yes.
I mean,
well, when they teamed him up with Slick, I guess that was just, you know, even worse.
Exactly. The one man gang, you know, a white guy who was actually, what, a biker? That was his image. And then suddenly he's walking around doing the yeah, boy, and, you know, walking around trying to play like he's all funky and walking like a black guy, the stereotype black guy. And when I see this now, it just brings back, you know, this horror dreams of that. I mean, you look at, like, who am I thinking about? The dog.
Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog, thank you. You know, the Junkyard Dog, when he was wrestling in Louisiana, I mean, he was bad. He was a badass.
Yeah.
He comes over to the WWF at the time, and what happens? He's dancing in the ring with kids. It's like every time you get a black guy in there, what does he have to do if he's not
Coco
bleached?
Beware.
Coco Beware. They're dancing away. Excuse me, not every black person wants to go around dancing anywhere, you know? And when I see this, it's like Vince McMahon, all he can think is just this one thought. Black people got to dance for white people. And it drives me nuts, especially a guy who could literally be a future world champion because he's got all the tools of being a monster.
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, instead of letting him do great matches, they got him as a dancing fool, and it's embarrassing.
And I guess Mark Henry is really the only guy that doesn't, you know, he could be Mark Henry, Brodus Clay.
Okay, what happened to Mark Henry before? What, Sexual Chocolate?
Of course,
yes. Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's just, oh my God.
Men on a Mission as well. It's been a constant thing with Vince McMahon.
I mean, you can even go back to the Soul Patrol too, just the name on its own. It's just like, Vince has just got to stop with this and let, when you have people of color, whatever it is, just let them be who they are. Don't stereotype them to what he thinks they should be.
I guess maybe The Rock is the one example where he just let him go and do what he wants. Well, I guess Nation of Domination.
I was about to go into that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You know what? Judging by Ahmed Johnson's work, where he probably would have hurt himself if he came out there. He would have blown out his knee or something.
Ahmed Johnson, yes. Another interesting random wrestling name to bring up. Jeff was saying he was watching an MC Hammer biopic.
I saw it. Go ahead, man.
Ahmed Johnson played Suge Knight. Is that right, Jeff?
Yes, he was Suge Knight. He was in MC Hammer's house doing a little bit of boxing with him.
Actually, he looked like he was in pretty good shape. I mean, he does.
Huge.
Yeah, I mean, he still got the gut. I mean, I met him when he was in his heyday, and I got to tell you something. His arms back then were as solid as a rock, and it was bigger than my leg. The man was huge. But then I remember when he left the WWF, going to the WCW, and man, he was just, the weight was there and everything. He just looked bad. So it's good to see that he's in pretty good shape now after all these years.
Yeah, Ahmed Johnson definitely always had a wedgie. I think that's what Jeff says.
Right up there. He'd be fine when he walked through the curtain. By the time he got to the ring, he'd be fully up there. Gone.
Well, you think you think Goldust gave him that wedgie?
All right, moving on from Ahmed Johnson's wedgie, John Cena and Kane. It's really starting to evolve now with John Cena, I guess, essentially embracing hate. If people watched Monday Night the other day, we saw Zack Ryder get completely destroyed by Kane, get sent to the hospital. Eve Torres, who I guess is Zack Ryder's new fling, that's what they're trying to work with there. But, you know, she got really upset at John Cena, and John Cena was really upset at himself. He thought it was his fault that all these things are happening to Zack Ryder. And now he's starting to embrace the hate. He did that really creepy, weird, angry face at the camera the other night. I know a lot of people out there want John Cena to turn heel. I don't know if this is essentially it, but it seems like, you know, he's finally becoming, you know, the angry, really mad, you know, just guy that runs through people and doesn't care about doing the good things anymore. I think this is the John Cena that a lot of people want to see, Rudy.
No, I agree with that. I mean, if you look back in John Cena's history, I mean, he was a bad guy. He was nasty. I mean, with his raps, he used to insult the crowd and other people. And it's funny, when you look back at those old videos, I kind of liked him that way. I mean, yeah, he was really good as a heel. Now, with throwing Zach in there, I love the kind of twist, because they're doing two things. One, they're bringing the hate with John Cena, but with Zach, they're really making him out as a hero. I mean, there's got to be, at some point in time, he's going to win back the U.S. title. Hopefully, yeah, it's going to happen at WrestleMania. But the fact that this guy, who was considered just, you know, a DEFG wrestler, to now being the hero of people, this is going to give him a chance to hopefully, maybe down the line, could we see him win a world championship? Heroes usually do, and he's on that course. So I think great for him.
Yeah, Jeff, it seems like Zack Ryder is definitely getting over. And John Cena, just your thoughts on this whole embracing hate thing.
Yeah, I really like what they're doing with Zack Ryder. I really think they're going to turn that into sort of a, you know, a David versus Goliath story, which people love getting on board, you know, at WrestleMania, maybe with Kane, and have him be, you know, sort of an incredible underdog that's able to pull off these wins. Sort of like what Mikey Whipwreck used to be in ECW, where, like, he would just have, you know, would get destroyed and then somehow pull off a win. So I think that's really cool. John Cena turning heel, I mean, I think it's the right thing to do, but whether or not Vince McMahon pulls the trigger on that, because he is, without a doubt, their number one babyface and the face of the company, and I don't know whether the time is right, you know, for him to turn heel. When you look back at history, you know, you know, they didn't really turn Austin, you know, back into a really, really bad guy when he was around, and Hogan, of course, was such a big face. I don't know if they'll probably tease it, but whether or not they pull the trigger, I don't know. What's up with Kane wearing a mask again? After 10 years, he's become self-conscious again?
Well, it's weird, because he wears the mask over the mask. He wears, like, yeah, the welder's mask to come out, and then he carefully takes that off to make sure he doesn't rip the other mask off to expose his face.
He was fine with his bare face for, what, 10 years, and all of a sudden he's got a mask on again. I don't really get... menacing, but I don't know. From a logic standpoint, it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, well, you figure with the amount of years that he's been wrestling and the fact of his size, I actually like what's going on with Kane himself, because he's back to being menacing. But he's the kind of wrestler if I was a wrestler, I would love to wrestle, because he will take care of you. And as we talked about before, John Cena needs this, not only because this is going to help his image, but because he needs to be protected leading into WrestleMania, especially in these crucial months.
Yeah.
Kane is the perfect guy to take care of him, to make sure he doesn't get injured, because he's not going to be moving too fast. They can move slow. They can do a little bit of power moves here and there and still put on good matches. So I think this is a great matchup. And again, going back with John Cena, seeing the hate in him, he really needs that image, because that whole Fruity Pebbles thing, I mean, it could have really backfired on him.
Yeah, well, I think we're just finally seeing John Cena finally boil over, I guess, after all the things he went through with The Rock, and now Kane has been able to bring it out of him. But like you said, Jeff, I mean, he is their biggest baby face as far as, you know, revenue number goes with the merchandise. John Cena sells the most things. So to turn him heel at this point, going into WrestleMania, would not be good as far as the money coming in for the WWE.
But you figure, though, that no matter what, because we are talking Miami, we are talking the home of the Rock,
right.
No matter what happens, he's going to be booed there.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't even think it's not even so much as him turning heel. It's just the fact that finally we're going to see the inner anger in him, you know, boil over, and it's supposed to boil over on The Rock in his home turf. So that'll be interesting.
Just a side note on the Zack Ryder thing. The WWE originally put out that he had a broken back. I know I'm doing this on a podcast. I'm doing the you know, the bunny ears, the you know, the quotation marks. So they said it was a broken back, but then they backtracked and said it's a herniated disc.
Oh.
So, because a broken back, you're going to be out for quite a while.
Doesn't that normally keep the guys out for like a year?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. I kind of wondered about that.
Yeah, so they backtracked a little bit and said herniated disc instead. So there's a chance that he could come back a little bit sooner than a broken back. Let's move now to the WWE Championship picture, and it's CM Punk against Dolph Ziggler coming up at the Royal Rumble. I love the way that they've built this up because Ziggler has beaten Punk four times in the month of January leading into the pay-per-view. Of course, John Laurinaitis admitted that he's going to try to screw Punk at Royal Rumble on Monday Night Raw. It was released in a fax. You know, John Laurinaitis got a fax. I don't know who gets faxes anymore, but David Otunga handed him a fax and saying that, you know, his job is going to be reviewed. There's going to be a review of him as the interim Raw general manager by Triple H on Monday. So the Monday following Royal Rumble, and I guess that throws a wrench into his plans possibly about trying to screw CM Punk. But I love the way they've built up the match. Like I said, that Dolph Ziggler, they've really gotten him over now with these wins over CM Punk. And you know what? It kind of puts into question that, you know, there's a chance that Punk might actually lose this match to Ziggler because they've built it up so well, Rudy.
I don't think it'll happen.
I don't think it'll happen either. But I mean, it's, you know, if you're really immersed in the WWE universe, you're thinking that, hey, there might be a chance.
Yeah. No, I love the way they've been building that up. I think it's a good thing for Dolph Ziggler. I don't think Ziggler is ready to wear the world championship yet, but I think he's the perfect contender to help build for that champion to take on whoever will eventually take his championship. You know, I've always said this about Ziggler. A, I hate the name Dolph Ziggler. I think it's stupid. But, and I also have to add in too, I really do not like this whole I'm a show off. I think Ziggler could follow the footsteps of the Nature Boy. He could walk that aisle. And what I love about him is he can go, he can wrestle any way that he wants to. And going up against somebody like CM Punk, I think that's a good candidate for match of the year. I think it's going to be really exciting, but I don't see him winning at all.
Jeff, I know you're a big fan of Dolph Ziggler. What do you think about this matchup going into the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I really like the way they've built this up for, especially Dolph Ziggler. And it's nice to see, you know, two guys like this with the work rate and you know, that have really put in their dues, you know, getting the rub of having the WWE Championship on the line. Like you said, I don't really see Punk losing the title, but I like the way that they've built Dolph Ziggler up into a legit threat. You know, I actually think that out of anyone that might, you know, need the Royal Rumble win, Dolph Ziggler might be the guy. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be easy because he has this championship match, but, you know, I mean, last year with Alberto Del Rio, that kind of put him over the top as a main event guy and made everyone believe, and I think that's what Dolph Ziggler needs is maybe something like that, or maybe even to pull off the upset and beat CM Punk for the championship. Now, you mentioned John Laurinaitis. He's going to be the guest referee, I understand. Are we going to see Mick Foley come out and sort of do like a WrestleMania Legends match between Foley and Laurinaitis over the Raw GM?
Well, Foley's in the Royal Rumble, so you never know. He might even be the one to win the title shot at WrestleMania. But, you know, it seems when Foley came back the other night, it made it seem as if, you know, maybe there's a chance that Foley even takes on Dolph Ziggler at WrestleMania. They kind of built a little bit of feud there. But just reading an article that Rudy just showed me, Dolph Ziggler with BetweenTheRopes.com, he mentioned that he's going to have something special for the Royal Rumble. He's going to do something special for this match. I'm really hoping it's not a shooting star press into CM Punk's rib cage.
Oh, yeah, not good.
It'll be interesting to see what this special thing is. I mean, I really don't even know what it could possibly be. Rudy, you know?
I have no idea, but that's what I mean by it. I think this guy is, you know, he hasn't even reached his peak yet, and you can see every time he gets into the ring, his wrestling, the way he talks, the way he moves around, I think is just great. I just want to kill the person who turned around and said, yeah, we want you to be a show-off. That's what's taking away from the star that he really has being built around him. You let him be who he is, and trust me, this guy's going to fly, and I could see him with the world championship. Maybe in a year, maybe in a year and a half. Not right now, but this whole show-off thing has to go away. Let the man do what he does well. He's a good chain wrestler, too, so I think it's going to be an exciting match.
Jeff, do you feel that maybe Dolph Ziggler needs to get away from Vicky Guerrero? He doesn't need the manager because he can do things all on his own now that, you know, he doesn't need anybody speaking for him?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but I actually think Vicky Guerrero's a great character. I think she does really, really well in the role that she's in. So, I mean, I do see your point about Ziggler. You know, he can do it on his own, but I really like the Vicky Guerrero character. She probably might be better suited for some of these other guys that sort of lower down and you know, don't really get their point across on the mic, unlike Ziggler. But I like them together. I honestly do.
Here's the thing that I would love to see. I would love to see maybe, if they could have hired Ric Flair back, or even take in one of the former Four Horsemen, even Arn Anderson, whatever, and have them as his manager, I think then he could really look like a legit contender for the world championship. Because, like I said, the guy can speak. When you look back at what the Four Horsemen did, he really reminds me a bit of Ric Flair and Tully Blanchard and put them together. He's got that kind of style. So that's why I would love to see maybe one of those guys maybe come out of retirement and maybe be his manager, because I think he really is that good. And it's like, it's going to be years from now before we really see how really good he can be.
Let's move on to the fourth match that has been announced so far for the Royal Rumble, and that is the triple threat steel cage match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Daniel Bryan versus Mark Henry versus The Big Show, and they've really built Daniel Bryan up as sort of this lucky champion. You know, he cashed in the Money in the Bank to beat Big Show and take the title, and now he's just been scurrying around and finding ways to win, you know, by hook or by crook to keep that title. I heard the groan there, Jeff, so clearly this is not a storyline that you're really interested in.
I like the Daniel Bryan storyline. The Mark Henry and the Big Show in one match, it's just something I'm not looking forward to. I guess they have the benefit of having the steel cage there where they can, you know, sort of limit themselves to the work rate and sort of have the big bruising, you know, physical match. But I just really hope, I like what they're doing with Daniel Bryan. I like that they're having sort of these young, you know, Cinderella type storylines, but I really hope we don't see, you know, Mark Henry and the Big Show sort of take each other out and Daniel Bryan wins by default in this match. I'm sure that's probably what's going to happen, because realistically, who would believe that Daniel Bryan could take out either Mark Henry or Big Show? But I like Daniel Bryan. A win over these guys would be good, but two of them at once, I don't know about the what kind of quality of match we're going to get.
My issue with Daniel Bryan is that he doesn't have a gimmick right now. He's not really anything. He's not. I think he needs to be sort of that malicious, you know, angry. I mean, we've seen him at sometimes, you know, you get a little angry, but I think he needs sort of that, you know, Chris Benoit mentality. I know that's a touchy-feely name to throw out there, but he needs sort of like when Kurt Angle just went around and broke people's ankles. He needs that sort of mentality. But right now, this whole gimmick with him, you know, just squeaking out these victories, It makes him seem like a paper line. I don't, you know, he doesn't have much credibility with me, Rudy.
You know what? Every time I see him wrestle, I think of David Arquette when he was the WCW World Champion. I mean, I get what they're trying to do, and yeah, with the whole lucky champion thing and everything else. But when I'm just, I don't believe it, you know. And his reading the script is so bad. It's just like, guy, don't speak. Just go in there, wrestle, get beat up, you know, lose, and then go out. I mean, let's face it. They use the term superstar. I don't know what he was like and why all these internet guys were all in love with him, whatever, but when I watch him wrestle, he just reminds me of a preliminary wrestler. If it was back in the day and the old kind of wrestling, he'd be the guy who would get beat every week, or he'd have to go in a real small territory nobody knows anything about to be champion. But, you know, when I see him with the belt, I think of all the great champions, from the Ric Flairs to the Ricky Steamboats to the Undertakers to the Triple H. There is no way you can put him up there. It just doesn't work. So he'll probably squeak by, and he'll probably still have the championship just to piss people off. And, you know, and that'll be good, because that's what business is all about. But if you're looking at the tradition of wrestling, nah, there's no way in hell this guy would ever hold a championship.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you just have to go back, I guess, 6 months ago, and there's people chanting his name in arenas. I mean, when we saw him at Night of Champions in Buffalo, Alter and myself, he was, and Igor Henriquez of the, you know, of Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we went down to Buffalo and saw this. people were chanting his name, and he was wrestling in the dark match before the pay-per-view. He couldn't even get on the pay-per-view. So, I mean, I'm not sure what the WWE is exactly trying to do here. I know they had to put the belt on him because Mark Henry went down with a groin injury, so he had to cash in the Money in the Bank. But he just doesn't have a personality. And, I mean, we remember when Kurt Angle first showed up, you know, he was all just about the wrestling. He didn't have a personality, but finally they told him, you know, this is what we want you to do. Be yourself. And finally he became, you know, a superstar, like you're mentioning, Rudy.
You know what? Here's what I would have done. Sure, have him win the belt, but then I would have had him lose the belt. And I'll tell you something, he probably would have had credibility more doing that than what he's got now. And then maybe somewhere on the line, because the determination, you know, I knew what it felt like to have that title. Looks like we lost one of our buddies there. But anyways, I'll keep going while we try to get him back. If he had lost the title and then the determination of trying to go back and trying to get that championship, I think that he would have looked more like what the real champions of the past, the names I had mentioned before, would really end up showing, that he can be one of the best. And I think he needs that kind of thing. This whole thing that's going on right now with him actually trying to wrestle against two bruisers and making people believe that he has a chance. I mean, yeah, sure, they are showing that, yeah, you know, there's no way he's going to win it or whatever else. But we all know, and somewhere along the line, he is going to end up winning it. But we're talking about two guys who are practically two of the biggest and strongest wrestlers in the WWE. That, you know, there's not going to be any real momentum going on with this. So what's going to happen with him as a champion? Who knows? But for now, with what's going on here, I don't think it makes anybody look all that good. So let's see. Hopefully things will change up in the future, because this is all about leading up to WrestleMania. But we'll have to see. I mean, like I said, man, when I look at him, I just think of David Arquette, and that just scares the hell out of me.
I think we got Jeff back now. I think he was so bored about your rant there that he hung up on.
The things I got to do to get you back on the line, man.
All right, let's move into the 30-man Royal Rumble match. And you know what? Let's start with some of your favorite memories about the Royal Rumble. I mean, it's sort of the second-best pay-per-view behind WrestleMania. Jeff, let's start with you.
Oh, favorite memories of Royal Rumble. It's got to be. I know Rudy's probably going to say this. He's probably getting mad at me for taking it. But the year that Ric Flair went from number three and won the world title, I thought that was probably the best Royal Rumble that there has been.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I really liked when Rey Mysterio won. And I know, Rob, we've talked about this before. I think it was 92. My favorite WrestleMania moment, personally, Bushwhacker, Luke or Bush, one of them, comes marching down the aisle. He gets in there, and he just gets promptly tossed out. I think he lasted about 3 seconds in the match. And then just does his march back up the aisle like nothing had happened. It was hilarious.
They showed a video on Monday Night Raw just about the statistics of the Royal Rumble, and they showed that at the time it was the Warlord who had the fastest elimination. He walked in, Hulk Hogan clotheslined him over the top rope. I think they put that down as 3 seconds. And then Santino Marella broke the record for 1 second when he came into the ring and was knocked out by, I believe it was Kane. So Santino Marella actually holds the record for the fastest elimination. But Rudy, I saw you nodding your head about the Ric Flair thing. Is that your favorite Royal Rumble memory?
It would have to be, because that win really changed the whole course of wrestling in a whole, whatever organization you want to think about. Because if you remember back then, Ric Flair had left WCW under dispute because of contract. He goes to the WWF, which, of course, WWE. He enters into the Royal Rumble. That particular one, back then, it wasn't about who won would get a future shot. It was who was going to be world champion. And in a span, we're talking like in 2 months, Ric Flair went from being the WCW/NWA world champion, being the WWF/WWE world champion. Nobody ever thought that would ever happen. It finally did happen. And it actually made WCW look even worse because of that. And so I thought, you know, having Ric Flair win that championship, and he said it was the greatest moment of his life. The only other thing that I can think about is probably, and this is going to surprise a lot of people, but I still love this, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And the reason why is Stone Cold really set an attitude for the Royal Rumble, because every time he eliminated somebody, which I love, he sat on the turnbuckle and he kept looking at his wrist as if he was looking at a watch going, next, yeah, next, next, put the guy over, and then was like, next, next. That really set a tone for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the 97 one. I was going to bring that one up, because if you remember that match, it was sort of getting into the Austin Hart feud, and it was sort of, you know, setting up the Bret Hart heel turn. He was still a face at the time. He came into the match. You mentioned Austin was throwing people over the top rope, and then during the match when Hart came in. He threw Austin over the top rope, but the referees were preoccupied with another guy who had gotten thrown out, so they didn't see the elimination with Austin. He came back in, ended up tossing Hart over to win the Royal Rumble back in 97. My other memory would have to be 94. Royal Rumble. Bret Hart, Lex Luger, both going over the top rope at the same time. And the camera work on this was unbelievable because obviously you see the normal shot where they have, you just see the entire ring. You see them go over so you don't see whose feet touches first. And then there's a secondary shot of a guy on the apron, and just as their feet are about to touch, the ring post gets in the way, so you can't see whose feet touches. And of course, they ended up going to WrestleMania, having those matches to see who would win the title. Bret Hart wins against Yokozuna. I believe it was because they soured on Lex Luger. There was some sort of a contract dispute or something. He wanted more money, so they decided to go with Hart instead.
There was a couple of things. There was a couple of things. Plus, because they were really looking at Lex Luger to be the next Hulk Hogan, which is why they did that whole Lex tour and everything. And fans weren't really into him. The other thing is, too, and if people know anything about Lex Luger, I mean, Lex Luger has not always been the greatest wrestler in the world. I mean, he has the body, but he really wasn't, you know, that kind of a wrestler. He always needed other people to help look, make him look good. When you're the champion, you have to make the other guy look good. No matter how much you're looking like you're getting beat, you can't do that with Lex Luger. Plus, Lex Luger was the kind of guy who never really liked telling people he was a wrestler. So It wasn't, he wasn't into wrestling. He was just getting paid to be a wrestler.
Plus, he killed Miss Elizabeth.
Yes. No. Hey. We weren't there, so we can judge the way we want to judge.
He allegedly—I'll correct myself. He allegedly killed Miss Elizabeth. Let's move to the actual Royal Rumble, Jeff, and let's start with your picks. You mentioned Chris Jericho. Is that your pick for this year's Royal Rumble main event?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked about Randy Orton being that it's in St. Louis, but the fact that they've announced that he's going to be, back tonight, I think, and they've already said, you know, he's coming back in time for the Rumble, I think that sort of loses a bit of its luster and makes me believe that he won't actually win the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, Jericho seems like the logical pick, I guess, for me. I think it's a really easy pick, but I think it's Chris Jericho that goes over, but I don't think that's the guy that really deserves it the most. I think there's guys that are sort of on the cusp of the main event that could probably do a lot better with the Royal Rumble win. But the thing is, too, with the Royal Rumble that I really like is there's always that one sort of upper middle card guy that's in there for like an hour and sort of makes his career because he was in there for so long and eliminates a couple of guys. And that's always sort of the sub story of the Royal Rumble. So I'm really curious as to see, you know, who that is this year.
And that might be Brodus Clay. I honestly think that's who it might be. Brodus Clay to be the big monster this year in the Royal Rumble.
Why do you say things like that, man?
I really think it will be.
No, you don't. You're just doing that to bug me. That's all you're doing.
Okay,
that
I'm going to make my pick really quickly. I think it's Chris Jericho. Rudy, who do you got?
I think Rey Mysterio. I think Rey Mysterio is going to make this comeback. Nobody's going to know anything about it. I think he's going to win.
Undertaker. That's a name I just thought of right now. Is there a chance that The Undertaker returns at the Royal Rumble on Sunday, you think, guys?
I don't think he's going to have anything to do with the Royal Rumble in particular because I think the whole focus is just going to be him, WrestleMania, and, of course, the winning streak.
Yeah, I agree. I would think maybe we see him on maybe the Raw after the Royal Rumble, but I don't think that they, if he's not going to win the Royal Rumble, I don't think they take away from whoever's going to win it by bringing The Undertaker back on this pay-per-view.
All right, we haven't had a chance to speak about this yet, but the WWE did announce their first couple of people to go into the Hall of Fame this year for WrestleMania weekend, and yes, that would be one of them, the Four Horsemen. But let's start with Edge, who was the first announcement made. I mean, bravo to Edge. What a fantastic career. An unfortunate end to it, but he's got a whole acting career and stuff going on right now. Jeff, what are your favorite memories of Edge?
Oh, well, I was there. You know what? I'm trying to think when it was, but I was at a event in, I think it was Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, and this was before Edge was signed by the WWE, and they brought him in to work the opener, and he was still going by Sexton Hardcastle.
I forgot about that name!
You know, they brought him in to work the opener, and I can't remember who he wrestled off the top of my head, but I remember thinking, who is this Sexton Hardcastle guy? And then years later, I discovered that he would become Edge, but I mean, there's so many great Edge moments. I mean, anything Edge and Christian where they were doing 5 second pose was great. You know, the TLC matches with the Dudleys and the Hardys, and of course, his, you know, his singles career where he won, I don't know, the world title a whole bunch of times. I do try to forget the whatever it was live sex show that him and Lita.
That's hard not to forget, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Brother, that they decided to have on Raw, but so many good Edge moments, and good for him. I mean, some people were saying, you know, it's a little quick since he's only been, you know, out of action coaching for maybe a year, but I think it's right. I think he deserves it.
I know, Rudy, you got a chance to speak with Edge a little while back.
Well, you know, and that's what I'm going to go to when you were talking about memories. I think my memories aren't so much in the ring. It was outside the ring and the conversations that we've had, whether we were doing interviews or we were out somewhere. And, you know, I know him by Edge. I know him by Adam Copeland. It was just interesting and the stuff because he is such a fan of wrestling. So the things that we talked about were, you know, when we would talk about how we pretended to be, you know, wrestlers and we made our wrestling belts and, you know, that's what he did and, you know, made his little ring in the backyard and, you know, and collecting wrestling magazines. I mean, we really talked a lot about that and I always kept saying to him, but man, you actually did it. You know, I still played the fantasy. You did it. And he was like, well, you could have done it too. I said, no, not like what you did. I mean, this guy was an 11-time world champion. And whether it would have been in this era or back in the day, I think Adam slash Edge would have been world champion. He's that kind of charisma. And the fact of being Canadian just makes it all the better.
Yeah, and I mean, if you have to put him up there with one of the with the Bret Harts and the Owen Harts and yeah. Chris Benoit and guys like that, Jericho, of course, as well. I mean, if I was to pick a memory just for a specific spot, it's got to be the spear on Jeff Hardy in that TLC match, that classic
yes.
TLC match back in the day at WrestleMania. But, I mean, I like you, Rudy, got a chance to speak with Edge about a year ago. Was at the Conn Smythe dinner here in Toronto, and he actually flew in from, I think it was Long Island, like the night before or the morning of. It might have been the day of, actually, just to show up at this event and, you know, just to put his time out there for all this charitable work. I mean, he really is a class guy.
You know, one of the things that in our conversation, the last time when I spoke to him, you know, even with the injury, if he wasn't injured, he would have still retired. He felt he did what he needed to do in the ring, and he wanted to do other things. I mean, let's face it, we all know when it comes to wrestling, you know, working out, the traveling, the interviews, it takes a lot out of the body, and he was just about done. So he said, whether it be, you know, the injury or no injury, he would have been done. So, you know, I'm glad he decided to go when he wanted to go, but even better, he went out as a world champion.
By the way, Edge, a former graduate of the Humber College radio program.
There we go.
So
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah, props to all three of us here, former Humber College grads. So, yeah, Jeff, you're going to say that?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up, that he was a proud Humber College grad, just like the three of us.
All right, let's move on to the other announcement, the Four Horsemen going into the Hall of Fame. And let's start with you, Rudy, because you're the biggest Ric Flair fan out of all of us here.
I am so happy about this, and here's the reason why is, of course, I'm a big fan of Ric Flair, but also I'm a big fan of the Four Horsemen. And as you guys know, I'm an honorary member of the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair.
And the NWO.
And the NWO, but we're talking Four Horsemen now. Ric Flair, I asked Ric Flair, can I be a member? He said, yes, you are a member of the Four Horsemen. The thing about the Four Horsemen were they were just, they had such style. But, you know, the fact that the four fingers meant the symbol of excellence. Each guy that was in there, whether it had been Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, these guys went out and they put on great matches. I mean, they made other wrestlers jealous of them because these guys could go and the belts were put on them. But the thing is, though, they knew and they realized that they were carrying the company. And they did just that. So, yeah, when they talked about, you know, flying over here or doing this or doing that, they actually did it. When they talked about going into a bar or a club and how all these women jumped around them, they did that. When they talked about some of the things they did in hotels, they actually did it. Nothing they said was a lie. These guys lived the dream, and a lot of fans got a chance to watch that, and they believed it. Remember, four fingers, symbol of excellence. Be who you can be, but be the best. And the Four Horsemen did that.
And you know what? They've tried to do factions since, whether it be the NWO, DX, I don't know, the Natural Born Thrillers, whatever you want. But nobody can touch the Four Horsemen, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually really happy that J.J. Dillon's going in with them because,
yes.
You know, he was always the manager and, you know, not necessarily the focus of the Four Horsemen, but always a solid part of that team. I was a little confused as to, you know, the exclusion of Ole Anderson because he's always been one of the top guys, but I'm sure there's probably some sort of backstory there. I was also confused that, you know, Paul Roma and Mongo McMichael weren't included.
Yes. Who can forget the Mongo McMichael days?
Well, leave that out.
And woman, of course.
Oh, my God. No, there's a reason why they're not in. But JJ, I absolutely agree with you. JJ really helped bring everything together.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a spokesperson. And in real life, he was the guy who drove them around.
Yeah.
And when there were disputes, you know, behind the scenes, he was the guy to smooth things over. So he really was their manager.
Now, I know, Rudy, we were talking about this before we started the podcast, but Ric Flair says he will be there. But as we all know, he is currently under contract with TNA. I mean, how is he going to find a way to get out of this?
I don't know, but if you go on YouTube, there is a video. He's signing autographs, and somebody is asking him, will you be there? And he said, yes, I am going to be there with my friends, no matter what. So there is talk that you know, he has to, of course, speak to TNA to see if they'll let him go. If TNA is smart, let him go there. Let him do it. It's just helping promote them in a special way, because he's going to come back with another ring, and they can do whatever promotion, fight, whatever they want with it. So,
now
there was also Ric Flair. I don't know if it was a tweet or something. He had mentioned that they've asked him to keep his speech shorter than 7 minutes. So, guaranteed he's going to be there.
It's going to be tough, and he'll probably be bleeding from the forehead as soon as he steps on the stage with all those nasty scars. Let's talk about some of our favorite factions other than Four Horsemen. I mean, all three of us love the Four Horsemen, but Jeff, I know you're a big NWO fan.
Yeah, NWO, the original NWO, where they were sort of just starting out, and just these guys that used to wrestle in WWE were coming over, and they really had you believing in the fact that, you know, there was an invasion going on. You know, 1 week Ted DiBiase shows up, and then the next week Sean Waltman shows up, and then the former Virgil is there, and Mike Rotunda. I thought that was really cool. I mean, there's so many great factions. The Heenan family from back in the day, you know, Bundy and Studd and Paul Orndorff and Rick Rude, they were all trying to take out Hulk Hogan. I thought that was really cool. There's been so many great factions, but I know Rudy will agree, there's never been anything like the Four Horsemen.
No, absolutely not. Like these guys wore suits. These guys would buy, you know, Corvettes. You know, one guy would buy a Corvette, the other guy's got to buy a bigger Corvette. Another guy's got a Rolex, he's got to get more diamonds on his Rolex. That's why I love the Four Horsemen. And I agree with you, too, when it comes to another faction, the NWO, because they changed the way things were done in the ring. And not just in the ring, outside of the ring, too. The same thing with the Four Horsemen. The only other faction I can think of that I really liked, do you remember the original Legion of Doom? And
when
we talk about the original, we're not just talking about the Road Warriors. We're also talking about Jake Roberts was part of this. And I do believe King Kong Bundy was a part of this, too, back in the day in Georgia. These guys just tore that place apart. And a lot of people don't even realize that that's what the original Legion of Doom was.
And I guess you could throw DX in there with the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, X-Pac, China as well.
But here's the problem I have with them. They were just a ripoff of the NWO.
NWO, true, yeah. But I mean, they were a popular faction. I mean, if you weren't an NWO fan, you were a DX fan. If you weren't a DX fan, you were an NWO. You had to pick a side. I think you had to pick a side.
If I remember correctly, and you remember this too, and Jeff, I know you're going to back up with this every time, and, you know, DX was doing anything, what was going on in the crowd? People were walking back and forth with signs, NWO. That's why, to this day, they check your signs before you can show them up, because it was driving them crazy.
That's
and
true.
Then that whole thing about driving up to WCW's office and we're taking over. Oh, come on, man. That's the worst acting I've ever seen in my life. Put the Razzies up there. How much did they pay those guys to come around going, DX, great DX, NWO sucks. Come on. Guys on, like, award shows and football players were wearing NWO t-shirts. Everybody was wearing NWO
t-shirts. I do appreciate DX, though, for spawning the crotch chop, which I probably have done over 50,000 times when I was in high school.
Why?
So.
That's funny.
Why?
Who remembers the Dungeon of Doom? We had Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, that's right.
Was,
and the Giants.
Beefcake, who became Zodiac.
Yeah, and the Giant as well, Paul White. Obviously, we know now.
Kamala was in there.
Yeah, that's definitely a faction to forget, I guess.
Yeah, you know, there's one, and sorry, you guys can help me with this, and I don't know why I'm going blank. It was the Four Horsemen ripoff that the WWE had. What was it called again?
Evolution.
Evolution, honest to God, to me, I think was the worst that I've ever seen. Talk about a blatant ripoff of the Four Horsemen. And when you listen to the WWE, whenever they mention about Evolution, they try to make Evolution sound like they were the greatest faction ever because they had all these classy guys. I don't care what anybody says, whether it be the first family or, you know, the Heenan family or whoever, the greatest will always be the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, there's also the Union with the Big Show and Mick Foley.
I love the random obscure factions that Jeff can come up with. It's always good. It's too bad David Alter's not here because I know he's a big fan of the Union. He really loves that theme song that they have. Thanks for doing this, guys. We'll have to get together again next week, obviously, as the Royal Rumble goes this Sunday. I've started a Twitter account at Tom Top Turnbuckle, so you can start following us at there. We will have, you know, I guess, lots of these coming, a podcast every week. Eventually, we're going to get it on sportsnet590.ca. It's going to have its own particular blog where you can interact with us as well. But you can follow me on Twitter at WongSN590. Jeff is at Roho590. Rudy, what's your Twitter account?
Rudy680 News.
David Alter is also going to be part of this podcast. He's not here at the moment. He is in Ottawa for the All-Star Game festivities this week in the NHL. But you can also follow Dave at David Alter 590 as well. But yes, you can follow us at Top Turnbuckle. That is the official account of this podcast. And just before we go, just wanted to say thanks to Zach Cooper for coming up with the name. It's a fantastic name. I'll have to break it down exactly how he came up with the name and how it all got started. But appreciate you listening to the first edition of Top Turnbuckle. I'm Rob Wong for Judy, for almost called you Judy Blair. That's not that. I'm okay. I'm just gonna stop now.
Where's the chair?
Yeah,
where's the chair? Or the foreign object? Yes, I said foreign object.
International objects. That is Rudy Blair, Jeff Rahoman on the phone joining us. Thanks for doing this, Jeff.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rob.